Mike Aaron is on a mission to help people protect themselves and their families from scams and identity theft. After learning that his family and friends were scammed out of upwards of $250,000, he decided to help introduce people to tools and strategies that help protect them online and offline. Mike joins the Plutopia podcast this time as we discuss scams, scammers, and other dangerous wildlife. You might say that Mike is a lifeguard in the digital wading pool.
In 2024, the IC3, the Internet Crime Complaint Center, they're part of the FBI. They're the ones who track this sort of stuff. In 2024, reported losses of $6.5 billion. Go back to the New York Times estimate that only about 10% of this gets reported. We're talking $65 billion. That's just investment scams. The actual total was $160 billion for all of the different, for the ransomware, the botnets, the malware, the extortion, the real estate, the identity theft, the credit card check fraud, all of them. $160 billion. Average loss for over 60, $83,000 each.
Welcome, everybody, to the latest episode of the Plutopia News Network podcast. I'm John Lebkoski, and my co-host and partner, Scoop Sweeney, is sitting right over there on another screen. And our guest today is Mike Aaron. Mike had a lot of experience, like a couple of decades of experience working with renewable energy policy, political campaigns, and now he's changed his focus to personal cybersecurity and digital safety, specializing in helping individuals, families, small businesses, particularly older adults, to protect themselves against social engineering, identity theft, and online fraud, which we're all encountering, I think, substantially. And he does this through clear, practical security measures, which is what we're going to be talking about today. So, Mike, welcome. Glad you could join us.
Thank you, John. It's a real pleasure, A, to see you. I haven't seen you in the last number of years, but happy to participate, and I have become something of a minor evangelist on this, and hoping to spread the word, because it's something that a lot of people are, I think, not as aware of as they need to be.
Well, so when I knew you, you were working mostly with renewable energy, and now you've moved into digital safety. Do you see any similarities in the two, especially in terms of public awareness and behavior change?
Sure. The sort of backdrop is that the world is changing. And, you know, it's all somewhat related to Moore's Law, but the short version there is just the change keeps speeding up. And it's changing in response to a lot of technology advances, and we have to adapt. I think part of the change that's particularly interesting is things are going from technologies that we inherently understand. I apply fire to this, I get energy, and security, I have a key. This opens a door. And now we've got things like energy from the sun, it's invisible. Energy from the wind, it's invisible. And now we've got things like pass keys that are also invisible and helping to secure us. And a lot of people, some at higher levels, don't understand renewable energy. And a lot of people don't understand kind of the new threats and the new security features of online security. So yeah, I think they're inherently related.
So this was a little bit of shifting gears for you. Was there any one particular thing or one set of things that caused you to pivot a bit into this other realm of focus or this other focus?
Yeah. So I was, in the way that you know me, I've been an executive assistant for years, and got some fantastic opportunity to support some amazing renewable energy policy, especially here in Texas, and especially while I was working with a fellow named Mike Sloan. We did groundbreaking work in renewable policy, especially Mike. I was a supporting fellow. But as I continued to be an executive assistant, I got a little bit bored. So I started my own company doing fractional executive assistant work. And as I started doing the outreach and talking to people about, hey, give me business, I started reaching out to all of my contacts, and you were one of those, John, and saying, this is what I'm doing now. And in the course of those conversations, I found out like 5 to 10 of my close friends and family had lost a total of about $250,000 in scams. This just came out randomly. These are things like tech support scams and bank fraud and romance scams, just the things that you hear about. But if you start looking at the numbers, which I started looking at the numbers after I was learning these things, think about last year, FBI noted about a million, just under a million, actual complaints. About a third of those resulted in losses. The New York Times estimates that only about 10% get reported. So we're talking 10 million people reporting scams and total losses, something like 16 billion reported. So multiply that times 10. And we're talking real money, and we're talking like one out of every 30 to 40 people. Average losses in the about 20,000 per person, but for seniors it's 80,000. So it's sort of a long-winded answer, but that's it. Just it got my passion going. I don't want my friends and family, and I don't want anybody to deal with this.
Yeah, I share your passion because you can add my name to one of those to your long list. I've been really, I spent a long career in corporate IT with Kaiser Permanente in California, and part of my burden there in IT was security and privacy of medical information. And when Ascension Seton was hacked, when they had a ransomware disaster a while back, apparently my wife's medical treatments, was she had serious treatments at Ascension Seton in Austin and in Bastrop, and all of a sudden our credit card got hacked, and I got a $1,500 charge from some weird company that I'd never heard of. And of course, we got that straightened out because I'm very anal retentive about my financial, affairs. So I caught it right away. But it's unnerving that your medical history is obviously easy to get into these days. I just wonder how or average people can deal with this kind of thing, because it's not something that older folks had to deal with until recent years. But with the expansion of AI and the sophistication of the hackers, it's gotten really outrageous.
A couple quick points on that. And number one, congratulations on getting that money back, because in a lot of modern day scams, people don't. There is a, as I've been talking with people, especially, and there's, a little bit of, what do you call it? I think it's Bader-Meinhof, that I've started noticing this more because I'm paying more attention to it. So it occurs as more expansive than it may be. But a friend of mine, I'm going to call her Kate, I'm not using any real names, she got a call from her bank saying, we've found three transactions that don't look normal for your pattern. Are these your transactions? And she said, no, they are not. And they said, okay, We gotcha. And they did. Bank took care of it. About a week later, she got a call on her cell from someone identifying themselves as, I don't know, making it up to sound more believable, but hi, this is John Williams. I'm with the Federal Bureau of Investigation. My badge number is 147925. We are aware that you've had some fraudulent transactions at your bank, and we have a pending investigation for the bank. We believe there's someone on the inside who's committing these fraudulent transactions at scale. Can you help us? Our seniors especially are from an era where A, you trust authority. B, if someone presents a reasonable cause and you can help by doing not too much, we're likely to go, yeah, sure. They then told her, okay, this is an ongoing investigation. You cannot tell anybody at the bank. If you compromise this investigation, it will be 5 years in prison, $50,000 fine. So immediately they shift from her kindness to her fear centers. She ended up losing about $7,000 in the end, which was minor compared to the average loss, but this is how sophisticated it can get. It's really powerful and really scary.
So how exactly did they extricate that $7,000?
So what I think happened, and she wasn't sure when I last talked with her, but what I think happened is she must have somehow pressed something, clicked and opened a document on her phone. I think they had access to her phone because they could see, while they were on the phone, they could see what she was looking at in terms of her bank account access. They somehow or other, I don't know the details, but they deposited money into her account and then said, you have to go withdraw that now. That this was part of the test. We're watching what happens, but you need to withdraw that and send it back to us. This is federal dollars. And she did. And she put it in an envelope to an address and FedExed it off. This is where it gets crazy. This is where I get completely baffled. I have the mother-in-law of a very close friend, a family member's mother. They had an ongoing scam where they were talking with someone on the phone, going from store to store, buying gift cards, and then reading the gift cards, the scratching off the code and telling this to someone that they didn't know on the other end of a phone. It's not in the least bit rational. And it's becoming comparatively common. I don't understand it. I really don't. How this is becoming even vaguely normal.
Yeah, I mean, I'm somebody who was amazed that spammers were able to get people to respond to their spam. And I'm certainly kind of surprised that people are responding to these scams, but I nearly tripped over one just yesterday. I got a text that said it was from Coinbase and that someone had tried to log into my account and that I needed to contact them. And I was about to pick up the phone and call them until it hit me, you know, it dawned on me that, I mean, it's kind of an obvious scam, but for a minute there, I wasn't thinking, you know, I was about to do it.
I know someone who lost $80,000 in exactly that way.
Yeah, yeah.
It is, I think part of it goes back to the conversation we started earlier about these are things that are starting to go below the surface of I don't know, how the human animal evolved. There are things that we have to start paying attention to different cues that we're not used to and that are changing constantly.
Well, you know, you've also talked about another aspect of this is not just that people are being scammed and losing money, but also that they're losing their trust. We have an erosion of trust because this is happening so often, and it's become such a big thing. So what can we do about that, the erosion of trust? And that's kind of related to, before we started our talk today, we mentioned like misinformation and that sort of thing, and how there's a larger scale problem of erosion of trust because you no longer feel that you can believe even what you're seeing. Like you see a video and you don't know whether it's a deep fake or not, that sort of thing. So what do we do to restore trust?
I
hate
question.
To put that on you. it is kind of a big question.
I mean, there are practical solutions. Some of the practical solutions are going to be habitual. I called a friend the other day that I hadn't talked to in a while, and he said, "Is this Mike?" was the very first thing he said. Not hi, not hello, not Mike, what's going on? Is this Mike? There was an obvious question with a basis in doubt from the very start. One of the things we're going to have to get used to is callback. Like, okay, thank you, Mr. Sheriff. I appreciate the call. Please give me a number and I'll call you back. Or thank you and go to TravisCountySheriff.whatever and redo the call. It's going to be partially habitual. And that's not standard stuff. Are you familiar? Scoop, you unmuted. Did you have a comment?
No, I was just I was going to ask something, but kind of piggybacking on what you've been saying is I'm very much a fan of some old school tech that I utilize when I'm dealing with strangers or strange companies or strange anything. And I actually have a landline. And I have an old school answering machine, the kind you can screen your calls on when they come in. Because, you know, I've got plenty of voicemail boxes, but I don't give that out to just any old person or place. And I found that I've really been able to avoid the scammers simply because on this landline, it says it's a possible scam call. And, you know, that makes a big difference of being able to stop it before you even have to pick up the phone, because it's pretty obvious a lot of these calls, the spoofed caller ID is always a giveaway, because I know no one in Keokuk, Iowa or whatever. You know, it's like, but they will spam that stuff or they'll spoof stuff like that. And it's just a matter of really trying to not be too up to date on your technology. Sometimes it can be dangerous, because I know people who have been scammed by phony QR codes. They scanned it and ended up somewhere they shouldn't have been. So how do people avoid these new things that are popping up all the time?
But let me, before I try to answer that, let me go back a step. Your intention in maintaining your landline and maintaining your analog answering system, you are starting from a place of distrust. That's your basic starting point. And a lot of people, A, they're not there, but B, that's as sad a statement as I can think of. It goes back to the comment of we're having to go to a place of less trust. And it's breaking my heart a little bit, because our trust in this country is already significantly denigrated by devices and all of this digital fraud that comes in from information sources we can't verify, and our political, you know, we've gotten further and further. We don't have a Bear with me for a minute, a quick tangent. Do you guys know what a corpus callosum is?
Yes.
It's the little part of the brain that connects the left and the right lobes and allows them to communicate. We have lost a political corpus callosum in this country. And it is,
That's a
it's,
great way to describe it.
we can't even talk to one another anymore. We're just starting from different sets of values. And this is just one more hit to that. So we have the ways we find back to trust. And this is just me talking out my rear end. But a friend of mine just posted something the other day. 50% of Gen Z identify as neurodivergent. Again, a little bit of tangent, but the short version is that as we rely more on our devices, as we COVID gave us a hit to our ability to communicate person to person. But we have to find our way back there a little bit. It's literally the only way you can truly, I mean, sure, people lie, but we got cues. We have visual cues, facial cues. So the whole callback thing, the talk in person thing, but also we're just gonna have to rely on black box defenses going forward. There are things like BIMI, the brand identity, something or other that allows you to tell whether or not a brand is actually the brand in a online. Things like pass keys that most people don't understand. How many people can actually tell you what a pass key is? One out of 20, one out of 30, but we're having to rely on them today. So part of it's going to be technological.
Well, I mean, that's kind of an interesting thing to talk about. We're sort of getting into the practice of pass keys. So we're in a kind of transitional phase. And, it's a little bit hard to figure out, like, what are you going to use a pass key? It's got to be something that you can access when you need it, right? So, for instance, if I'm logging into Apple, I can use, in fact, they offer me the option to use one of my Apple devices as a source of a pass key, and I do that pretty regularly now, but they haven't removed the ability to just log in with a password because you got to have that backup. So I think that the adoption of pass keys is going to be a relatively slow process. There's a certain amount of friction and you say some people don't really kind of either don't get the concept or they can't figure out exactly how to get to it. And where am I going to store my pass key? If you have a password manager, you may store your pass keys there. And of course, password managers, I think, are important. But on the other hand, they're also potentially vulnerable. So you got to think about that. I mean, we're in a tight spot, I think. It's a little bit hard to figure out how to manage all of these things. And if you're, I mean, I happen to be somebody who's been plugged into technology for a while. And even though I'm an ancient, gray, old man, I kind of get things, and I don't have super problems figuring these things out. But I know a lot of people who are kind of oblivious to how technology works, and they just can't get it. They can't get it. And it's going to be so much harder for them to adapt, which I guess is your business model, right?
It's kind of my, so what I help people do, and I'm actually going to hop on the road to Houston almost as soon as this is done to, I've got a client in Houston tomorrow. Two of the things I help people with primarily right now, and it's evolving. almost daily, but helping them install a password manager and helping them use multi-factor authentication and secure their primary email inbox. Your these days our main email inbox is it's the keys to our kingdom. If someone has access to that, they can change all of our passwords. They can pretend to be us. They can do what's being done on, I mean, on Facebook or Instagram or something. People will create a duplicate account and then reach out to all your friends and ask them for money. And it works. They do it because it works. So I help people lock down their social as well. That's what I do practically, but I'm really focused on sort of teaching people, I don't know, just helping them become aware of what the risks are, how the scammers are coming through, what a romance scam is, what pig butchering is, just these basic things. And it's a little depressing to me that, like you said, John, we're in this in-between time. With passkeys, for example, but we're also in an in-between time in terms of as we're making those switches, sometimes the best advice we have is don't answer the phone. Don't click that. Just don't. Stop clicking. And it's the best approach we've got right now. And
Hey,
so
since you
I'm
brought up pig butchering, maybe you ought to explain it.
Oh, yeah. It is that's sort of the translation of the Chinese phrase that I couldn't tell you. And the idea is you fatten up a pig before you actually kill it to eat it. It adds fat, it adds flavor, it adds mass. And the idea is, and this happened to, I'll tell the story of my. Of one of my someone close to me. He had gotten a divorce. He lived alone. He someone reached out to him by text, got his number off the internet because that stuff's fairly available. It's public data in a lot of cases and not difficult to find in others. Just reached out to him, said, you get those texts all the time. Hi, how's your day going? And mostly I just report it. Every once in a while, if I'm feeling randy, I'll say, tell me who you are, or I'm going to report you. And 99 times out of 100, it's not anybody I want to talk to, and I end up reporting them. But someone did this to my uncle, and he was lonely. So he started up a conversation, and over time, they built up this story. They kept on fattening the pig. And he actually tried to send $34,000, and the bank stopped it. But here's the saddest part. We actually, so this person on the other end sent him pictures. This is me. We went and did a Google image search and we found out who the actual person was. Totally different name, totally different location, totally different person. Obviously, we found their profile. We found their posts. Their posts were public. We showed him. He didn't care. He was okay sending $34,000 to a stranger in an African nation because they told him that they loved him. And this is how these things work. We have so many lonely people there, and we're reinforcing the loneliness by saying, don't answer the phone. It's a big interconnected higgledy piggledy.
Yeah, I see a trend in the texts that I'm getting. I'm getting more and more texts from unknown numbers with very personal messages, like, oh, did I leave this thing at your house last night? Things like that. It's like, I keep wondering if I responded, where it would go, but I'm not going to respond.
I can tell. Well, I can tell you where it would go because I've been paying attention to this. They just want to build a relationship. It's totally, wholly based on social engineering. This is the phrase these days, and it is: give me an inch, I'll take a mile. Give me a little bit of information, I'll get a little more and a little more, and we'll build a relationship and we'll build trust, and then you'll send me money. And it works.
The whole part of, you know, the what happened to your uncle is there's another variety of that whole thing, and that's people who are hungry for fame and fortune, and they will fall for the, there's some horrendous, you know, multi-level marketing scams, just outright, you know, Ponzi schemes, all sorts of things. Give me your money and I'll make you the next Elon Musk. That in itself would just frighten me away. I definitely don't want to be the next Elon Musk because there's a lot that goes along with that burden. But it's just become really a pandemic of corporate crime going on. And that's one thing people really need to be warned about as well.
In 2024, the IC3, the Internet Crime Complaint Center, they're part of the FBI. They're the ones who track this sort of stuff. In 2024, reported losses of $6.5 billion. Go back to the New York Times estimate that only about 10% of this gets reported. We're talking $65 billion. And that's just investment scams. Just investment scams. The actual total was $160 billion for all of the different, for the ransomware, the botnets, the malware, the extortion, the real estate, the identity theft, the credit card check fraud, all of them. $160 billion. It is, again, average loss for over 60, $83,000 each. With a good chunk of those, that's average. That's average. So, yeah, I'm a little sort of evangelical these days. All my friends are getting tired of it.
Do you have a favorite scam?
I have a favorite scam. There is, so AARP, unsurprisingly, is doing a lot to combat this. They put together something called, hold on, let me see if I can, give me just a moment. BankSafe. It's an industry level training that they work with bank professionals to help them recognize when a fraud is, what a fraud looks like, so they can stop it. And it's made a difference. They also have a podcast called The Perfect Scam. That I listen to every once in a while to give myself an understanding of what these things actually look like. It's a good podcast, and I can only listen to so much of it at a time because I start yelling at my phone. I get depressed for a while after. So good on AARP for doing the work they're doing. And especially for their podcast, A Perfect Scam, I send it out because I encourage people, just go look at what these possibilities are. I don't have a favorite scam because the concept depresses me. What I am, the thing that impresses me about them, however, I tend to think of creativity and loopholes. These are the things that when our species was down to, what was it? I don't know. At when we were getting established as a species, we were down to like 18,000 of us at one point. And it's our capacity for creativity and loopholes that allowed us to survive. And that's what these scammers are doing. They are being incredibly creative. They're being, what is it? Smart monkeys use tools. They are being tool users in the extreme to better their own circumstances. It's not in ways I approve of, but I have to be impressed by it. They're using the tools at their disposal and they're using them well. So I'll sort of sidestep to that as not my favorite scheme, but what impresses me about what they're doing.
Well, one my well, not favorite, but one thing that I'm seeing more of is involving scams targeting people who are looking to improve themselves, to be a genius, or to be religiously empowered, or all sorts of personal growth scams. And I covered this sort of thing back in my early career as a investigative journalist with Ehrhard Seminar Training, EST, and I actually infiltrated one of their sales meetings, and it was just horrifying the things they would do to these poor people who just wanted to feel better about themselves. And they were all over me for weeks after that because somehow they found out my home address, would show up and said, "We need to get some money from you because we're going to make you a multi-millionaire." So, "No, you're not." And that goes on online all the time. There's all sorts of get rich quick schemes out there.
Scoop, they might have done it. I know a lot of best people who have a lot of money because of
Well, that may
something
have
about
been.
est, you know, it just seemed to work.
Well, it may also have been maybe they were in on the game.
Maybe
Full
so.
disclosure here. Est has a gentler, younger sibling named Landmark. I've done a fair amount of Landmark training. I enjoyed it. I got a lot out of it. But I understand that they did some pretty harsh stuff back in the day.
Yeah, I mean, Landmark's a bit different too. It's an evolution, I would
It
say,
is an evolution.
from EST.
I'm all in favor of self, fulfillment and improvement, but people who are like vampires in that space of just finding the folks that are suffering and saying, "I've got the answer. Give me your money."
But
Well,
here's okay. Go
go
ahead, John.
ahead. Well, I was just going to say the interesting thing about Werner Erhard is that he had gone into, I guess, sales seminars and things like that. And somewhere along the line, it occurred to him that you don't have to have a product to sell. The seminar is the product, right?
The seminar is the product, but
Yeah.
here's where things get real for me. Moving back to the fraud aspect, one of my favorite phrases is you can't solve for human. When someone tells me about an organization that's doing dumbass stuff or nasty stuff, I'm like, "Ooh, wait. Are they made of human?" Our egos, we need Maslow's hierarchy is so instructive to me that it all starts with a basic safety. We got to get the basic safety. It's a basis of a lot of fraud. Then belongingness. Ooh, yeah, I want to be part of that group. All whatever you're selling, I'm in. Self-esteem. It's the same thing. All of these things are sources for all of the fraud, the investment scams. The investment scams are, "I want to be rich." Why do people want to be rich? Part of it's ego. I mean, sure, I like a little caviar now and then. I like a good wine. And I can afford these things the more money I make, but a good chunk of it's just basic ego. That's and loneliness, belongingness. So much of the fraud gets in because of just basic humanity. And it's part of what makes us great. Hold my beer, watch this. That has moved us forward as a species. And it also removes some of the dumbass. So I don't know what point I'm trying to make, but It's all in there. It's the humanity that makes these things possible. It's the humanity that makes, for me, that partially makes my this mission of mine now interesting and worthwhile. It's what makes us interesting. I'm a little biased, obviously.
Yeah, this whole ego thing seems to be really being industrialized by cable TV. Look at some of the cable channels. MTV is the one of the ones that they have. They don't have music for music TV. They have very little music going on there, but a lot of people with really big egos and not a lot of scruples are doing all sorts of strange things for fame. And there's a lot of that on all these different channels.
Oh, I don't have a TV currently. We still consume plenty of media, but it's funny. My mom used to have to limit me to my TV usage when I was a kid, and when I went off to the University of Texas, I just got out of the habit and never ended up going back. But whenever I watch TV, when I'm over at somebody's house, I am amazed at the ads and the how they are interacting with people and the sort of things that they really push towards. And it you can see the basis of all of these fraud scams in all of that. It's all basic marketing. That's how the investment scams, the romance scams, these are things that car salespeople and door-to-door salespeople use every day. It's just taken on a wholly new aspect because you can't see where it's coming from now. You can't see the people on the other end, and they're using these techniques that we don't understand, and we've got to protect ourselves with these techniques that we understand even less. So, going back to the idea that our part of the way we escape this is going to be interaction with people, we're gonna have to come back to the humanity, to the face to face, to the checking. Hey, is this really you? A friend of mine, who I will call Joe, got a call from his sister at one point asking him, "What are you doing?" He's like, "What do you mean? I'm talking to you." He's like, "No, what are you doing talking to mom?" And he said, "I'm not talking to mom. I'm talking to you, obviously." "Then who's that on the other line talking to mom?" Someone had cloned his voice. AI. And literally cut. He's not a rich guy. There wasn't a whole bunch of money to be gotten there. The average loss just across the board is 19,000, but that's the average. At the lower end, $100, $200, that's scale enough. You do that 20 times a day, you're golden, especially when you're calling from another country that doesn't have the standard living. So we're going to have to get back to human. We're going to have to start trusting things that we don't understand. We're actually going to start relying on black boxes. We're going to have to start putting triggers in place. $10,000 and above requires a call to a second person, or requires an okay from the bank. We're going to have to come up with all of these new ways to be okay with moving money around, with even talking to people. So I don't know. I don't have good answers as to how we solve this yet, but I know technology is helping, and evangelism is gotta help a little bit. So I appreciate you guys being willing to talk to me about this.
Sure. I don't know. I was just thinking about the weird situation. I mean, like, I live in a neighborhood that is mixed in that there are some people here who lean one way politically and some that lean the other way. But there are people here who hang, during the elections, they were hanging big Trump flags on their houses or whatever.
Yeah.
And I have mentioned to people in that I talk to online, say, well, you know, I've got these neighbors and they're big Trump people. They have Trump flags. We get along fine. They say, you get along fine. So you, if you sit down with fascists, you're a fascist, you know? And it's like, what? And I don't know how to get over that. I mean, it's my actual friends, my online friends are saying this to me, you know? People are dropping people into categories and interacting not with the person but with the category, if you know what I mean.
And we always have, to a fair extent. It's becoming more and more there's the concept of the big sort. You familiar with that one? The idea that we, over time, we're tending to move into areas where people are more like us because it's just more comfortable. I like being able to go into a cafe and proudly wear whatever t-shirt I'm wearing with a political message and have people come up and slap me on the back and go, good job. And I don't
See,
like
I
people
was.
going, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I was. When I was in high school, there were these cliques, especially at the. I went to more than one high school, and there was one in particular, Odessa Permian High School. They were very cliquish. They had clubs and things like that. And I had just throughout, you know, my life, I had not really been much for identifying with a clique, I guess. I would just kind of move from one to another. I just knew people here, people there. And I was not of the kind that just kind of joined the club and became the club, you know? And this sort of dawned on me recently when I realized that I'm kind of not, I mean, we're very cliquish now. People are identifying really powerfully with particular cultural forces or political forces. And I'm actually less comfortable if I try to do that. So I don't necessarily want to go hang out with people who are of a particular stripe. I just want to hang out with people who are basically decent, you know?
And you realize, of course, that you're a bit of a freak for that.
I know. I'm totally a freak.
And that's why I'm his friend. We grew up in the same little town in West Texas.
Oh,
and
did you really? Okay.
Yeah. We were definitely not the clique types. And, to our credit, we hooked back up again when I moved back from California to the Austin area, and it just he kind of stuck on me, I guess. So yeah,
it was funny how much overlap we've had, even though he was out in the Bay Area, I was here in Austin, but we were sort of focused on the same kinds of things through our lives, so that when we kind of came back together later in life. It was like, you know, old friends.
But I'm gonna tie that little microcosm back to the macrocosm. One of the things that is most satisfying from my perspective, I think I'll call it truthy, is we want to be known. We really want to be known. And it's, you know, unsurprising to me that you two had so much in common in terms of both history, but also not being, I mean, you two were not part of the cliques. So you were a clique together. And you guys really, I mean, there's a deep understanding and appreciation between the two of you. And that goes back to my uncle. He just wanted to be known. To so many of these scams, these romance scams, we want someone to, even just someone on the other end saying, I love you, sometimes it's just close enough. And it's again one of the baffling parts, but fascinating parts about how these scams work and why someone is willing to, or I mean, sometimes it's just fear. All that they get, but they hit these underlying high motivation things to be loved, fear, deep desire to be rich, to be seen as important. I don't know. I keep coming back to that because it's the part of it that really makes it interesting to me. In addition to obviously trying to keep people from giving their money away to random strangers. So do you two are pretty tight friends. Do your other tight friends, how many MAGA tight friends do you have?
Ooh, that's a good question.
I have quite a few because I've stayed in touch with a lot of people from high school because we've had, reunions and things. And I was really surprised at the variety. One of them is a renowned gay activist in Dallas. Another one is a renowned political organizer for the or was a political organizer for the flight attendants union, very progressive person. And from what I knew of them in high school, I did not see that coming. But yeah, I was really pleased. And then there's others who are, diehard Trump people, and that's fine. I have a cousin who's just, MAGA to the core. Still love her, but I don't talk politics or religion with her. That's my general approach with strangers is I don't go into politics or religion until I can get a good lay of the land.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. I have people who are MAGA or Trump supporters in my family, including my son and my son-in-law and my brother. And I really do have to be careful what I say. It doesn't take much to drift into contentious territory when you're talking to people who are so committed to these particular beliefs, you know? And from my perspective, I think that their beliefs are wrong or wrong-headed. I try to be chill about that. I mean, I try to allow for the fact that I don't necessarily know everything, but I'm really, really pretty clear that most of what those people believe is just utterly wrong. And it's really hard not to want to have an argument, you know? But arguments are not usually that productive. I mean, you can have a more formal argument that leads to a th synthesis of opinion or so forth, but that ain't going to happen there.
Most of the places we differ are in value judgments with folks on the other side of the political spectrum. So I'm going to say pretty much never useful. Sometimes satisfying, but not useful.
Well, you know what they say? They also say, like, truth has a liberal bias. And,
I don't think I've heard that one.
oh, yeah. Well, it is a thing that people have said that basically the people who think of themselves as liberal, I mean, all this labeling of liberal and conservative and so forth. For one thing, I can say that MAGA people are not conservatives in the least. I mean, by definition, they're just not. And I don't know that I'm a liberal, you know? I do have liberal values, I guess, but liberal, I mean, I guess it depends on what you think it means, whether you could categorize me that way or not. But and that's the problem.
Has changed over time.
I know. It's sort of like what happened to woke. The term woke originally meant, you know, that you were like sensitive to social justice and equality and so forth. And it was co-opted by people on the right, and they made it a more pejorative term to and associated it with a kind of like hyper political correctness. And that disturbed me for a long time. I finally gave up. I've learned that when a word's meaning changes, it can be a losing battle trying to push it back into the original box it was in, you know?
I do know.
But we're getting a little bit away from what we were talking about. The one thing I wanted to ask you, and we're almost out of time, but what are your strategies for helping people who really don't understand technology to kind of help them have the tools and the mindset they need in order to be able to avoid being manipulated or scammed?
So there are practical strategies. One of the things that I do for money is help people do the basics, like recovery options for their email account, password managers, institute multi-factor authentication. But it's, I mean, even that is, it's a difficult row to hoe, especially for people who don't understand the technology. So in the meantime, I mean, there are going to be things, again, like managed safety, like there are account tools that will monitor. And for people who really don't understand, I think they're a good idea. Things like Norton LifeLock. I don't like it because it's a set it and forget it, and it gives a lot of people permission to stop paying attention, which I think is just a bad idea. But and they're expensive. But I don't think it's a bad idea if somebody has the money and lacks the understanding. Things like delays on first-time payees or cosigners for large drafts, auto holds on risky patterns. These things are going to have to become basic. Are you familiar with the concept of a shibboleth?
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite words just because it's a cool word. But code words. It's a code word to confirm that you are who you say you are. Like the friend whose voice was cloned and called his mother. They didn't have a shibboleth. They didn't have a code word. But fortunately, the daughter was there. The sister was there and was able to place a call and confirm. And that did the trick. Over time, we're gonna have to move to sort of a simplified process. And simplified process means automatic defenses, more defaults, and it's going to mean more friction. And we're going to have to get used to that idea. We're going to have to get used to the idea that another password, another code, another fingerprint, but it is increasingly going to be the cost of keeping your money in your account. And sometimes, you know, I was giving another talk to another group, and someone said, I used to work in tech, and now I keep all my passwords on a pad. I'm like, I approve. Totally. It's safe. It's not convenient. And if you're okay with that lack of convenience, more power to you.
Yeah, I use a password manager, and I often wonder what the consequences would be if that place was hacked.
Yeah, you're kind of trusting the people that you're trusting those passwords to. I do the same thing. You know, my wife and I have always had for a very long time a safe word that we know and no one else does. And that I found is very useful, and people should have a safe word with their, you know, inner circle.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So you can confirm that it's really them, because especially with the AI cloning that's going on. But yep. I must celebrate what you're doing. You're basically, it seems, a bit of a lifeguard in the digital waiting pool.
it's a better metaphor than I've heard. So I'll say yes.
So we have reached the end of our hour, and there was more than I wanted to talk about. So maybe we can do this again sometime. But thanks so much, Mike, for joining us.
My absolute pleasure. And because my mentor and coach would require it of me, fractionalea.net. The EA stands for executive assistant, which I'm sort of moving away from, though still put some butter on the bread right now. Mike Aaron, fractionalea.net, if anyone wants to get a lifeguard.
And we'll put that link on the website when we publish this.
I appreciate
it. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Mike.
John, Scoop, really appreciate your time today. Thanks, guys.
You can follow the Plutopia News Network at plutopia.io. On Facebook, go to @PlutopiaNews. On Twitter, it's @Plutopia. With John Lepkoski, I'm Scoop Sweeney. This is the Plutopia News Network, 20 minutes into the future.